statistics to me, things might have turned out better, as I'm generally good at numbers. I say this, but without much pride. It's a skill that hasn't been very useful to me. If I were a boy, it would be a different matter, but my delight in working out probabilities when I was 7 years old was of no help to my mother, who'd just been widowed at the time. In the sad vacuum of my father's passing, I spent hours penciling numbers on scraps of paper. They were sensible and orderly, unlike the chaos our household had descended into. Despite that, my mother kept her sweet, vague smile, the one that made her look like the goddess of mercy, though she was probably worrying what we'd eat for dinner. I loved her fiercely, though more about that later. The first thing the dance hall mama told me to do when I was hired was to cut my hair. I'd spent years growing it out after teasing from my stepbrother Shin about how I looked like a boy. Those two long braids, neatly tied with ribbons, just as they'd been all the years I'd attended the Anglo-Chinese girls' school, were a sweet symbol of femininity. I believed they covered up a multitude of sins, including the unladylike ability to calculate interest rates on the fly. "No," the mama said, "you can't work for me like that." "But there are other girls with long hair," I pointed out. "Yes, but not you." She sent me to an alarming woman who snipped off my braids. They fell into my lap, heavy and almost alive. If Shin could see me, he'd die laughing. I bent my head as she clipped, the nape of my exposed neck frighteningly vulnerable. She cut bangs in front, and when I raised my eyes, she smiled. "Look beautiful," she said. "Look exactly like Louise Brooks." Who was Louise Brooks anyway? Apparently, a silent movie star who was wildly popular a few years ago. I blushed. It was difficult to get used to the new fashion in which flat-chested tomboys like me should suddenly become popular. Of course, being in Malaya and on the far outskirts of the empire, we were sadly behind in style. British ladies who came east complained of being 6 to 12 months behind the London fashions. It was no surprise, then, that the craze for ballroom dancing and cropped hair was finally hitting Ipoh when they'd been full swing elsewhere for quite a while. I touched the shaved nape of my neck, afraid that I looked more like a boy than ever. The mama, shifting her large bulk, practically said, "You'll need a name, preferably English. We'll call you Louise." So it was as Louise that I was dancing the tango that afternoon of June 3rd. Despite the faltering stock market, our bustling town of Ipoh was giddy with the rush of new buildings built on the wealth of tin and rubber exports. It was raining, an unusually heavy downpour for mid-afternoon. The sky turned the colour of iron and the electric light had to be switched on, much to the dismay of the management. Rain drummed loudly on the tin roof, which the bandleader, a little Goanese with a skinny moustache, tried his best to drown out. The craze for Western dancing had led to the mushrooming of public dance halls on the outskirts of every town. Some were grand affairs, like the newly built Celestial Hotel, while others were no more than large sheds open to the tropical breeze. Professional dancers like myself were kept in a pen, as though we were chickens or sheep. The pen was a section of seats separated by a ribbon. Pretty girls sat there, each with a numbered paper rosette pinned to her breast. Bouncers ensured that nobody approached us unless they had a ticket, though it didn't stop some men from trying. I was rather surprised that someone asked me to tango. I'd never learned it properly at Miss Lim's dancing school, where, as consolation for being forced to leave school by my stepfather, I'd been taught to waltz and, more daringly, foxtrot. The tango, however, wasn't taught. It was too risque, although we'd all seen Rudolph Valentino dance it in black and white. When I started at the Mayflower, my friend Hui had said I'd better learn it. "You look like a modern girl," she said. "You're bound to get requests." Dear Hui, she was the one who taught me, the two of us staggering around like drunkards. Still, she tried her best. "Well, perhaps nobody will ask," she said hopefully, after a sudden lurch almost brought us down. Of course, she'd been wrong. I quickly learned that the kind of man who requested the tango was usually a boyer, and the one on that ill-fated 44th day was no exception. He was a salesman, he said, specializing in school and office supplies. Immediately, I recalled the crisp cardboard scent of my school notebook.